Hi there, and greetings to everyone seeking and hoping to find the true meaning of life, those sick and tired of this poisonous world whose soul and spirit are bleeding, and of the emptiness and futility of this materialistic civilization. Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Welcome to our world of supreme love and immortality, where all human hopes are fulfilled. Welcome to the world of Orthodox Christian spirituality, a world now unknown to the West, which once had the key, but lost it a long time ago, the key that has an answer to every question. My name is monk Arsenije Jovanović. I live in the monastery of Ostrog, Montenegro. It is never too easy to talk on spiritual issues, especially when it has to be in foreign language, which is English to me. I apologize in advance for possible mistakes. However, I believe God will help me to say the word and you to understand it. So, let us embark on our waves. It was June the 17th, 1987, when I arrived for the third time on American continent at the Kennedy Airport. Both handles of my brand new Yugoslavia-made suitcases broke off. Fortunately, I had some wire in my baggage, so I could fix it. So I had certain problems with customs when they saw that I'm, you know, doing something with my suitcases before the exit. So they checked well everything what I had in my suitcases. So, of course, they couldn't find anything suspicious except my primitive but very well-made tools for making shoes and boots. That was one of my occupations. Back in Belgrade, I decided to learn how to make boots and shoes basically out of snake skin. So they were very attractive and unique, very eccentric. And I was doing them mostly for rock musicians and artists from Belgrade. So finally, I found myself in New York for the third time, and this time I planned this to be for good. I wasn't alone. There was a friend of ours, Yelena. She was planning to spend the summer in New York and to visit our friend Gera, our common friend Gera. So now we were traveling in cab, in yellow cab, from Kennedy Airport towards Upper East Side Manhattan. If I remember well, it was East 83rd Street. So when we arrived, Gera and Julia, they welcomed us and showed us their apartment, which was one of those train apartments, typical for New York, that you go from one room to another, like in train. And when we left our luggage and when we saw our rooms, we sat all in middle and the biggest room in the apartment, which was actually the painting studio of Geras. I was surprised to see his paintings. They were very large canvases, and you could see it depicted on them. He was in his Byzantine period, if I can call it this way. The background was this deep Byzantine blue with kind of flying monasteries surrounded with walls and with red curtains on them. And it was interesting to me because we were not religious at that time. But somehow, symbolically, it was showing his deep longing of his hungry soul, his soul which was craving for spiritual fulfillment, but was wounded with drugs and very vice living. And this way, symbolically, he was showing that he was longing to escape this corrosive world full of poisons and full of misfortunes and sadness and tragedies. But at that time, unfortunately, we couldn't really realize what the real way is and where the real exit exists and stands. So basically, we were very happy to see each other now on a new continent, full of joy that the big new life is in front of us, promising adventure and big success in the big world. And we were hoping that we are also going to be able to have a bite of a big apple, which was the another name for New York City. And for the first month, we didn't look for any job, and we were living easily, spending money that we have brought with us from Yugoslavia. But since this was not a very large amount of money, in about 1 month we were forced to look for a job. In the very beginning, we just indulged in nightlife of New York City, which was really very rich in this manner, and we thought we are the happiest people in the world, thinking this is the biggest happiness, that you could spend whole night in nightclub in New York, which was a dream of many young people all over the world. And we thought this is the jet set, the high life. And of course, we just continued the way of living that we started in Belgrade, which was shortly called sex and drugs and rock and roll. Deep in myself, I was faced with the fact that this was ruining my life and my health. But I thought this is just temporarily, and I will find the good job and the more proper way of life in the big city. In the same time, I was also continuing to practice transcendental meditation. I was looking for every free moment to meditate. Although, even from Belgrade, I remember that the things were going bad more and more. But I thought it is not in a real connection with the meditation. I thought this is the way of life that I was leading, and I thought I was convinced that if I meditate more intensively and steadily every day, that the things will straight up, that everything will be much better. And of course, the people from transcendental meditation, our teachers, they were telling this to us, that we just have to continue and to be very steady in this action, and things will straight up. So I was forcing myself to meditate, but especially when I arrived in New York, I started to feel certain fear during the meditation, and especially after finishing those 20 minutes or half an hour of meditating. So I didn't know why is this happening to me, because before, when I started to meditate, I didn't feel this fear. And it was a fear of emptiness, like I'm losing myself, like I'm losing my personality. But still, I was very stubborn in it, and I had this belief that it will change towards better way of meditation and of my whole life. So the more I was meditating, the bigger was desire for smoking marijuana. And that was present every day, almost every day. This was giving me a consolation in this solitude of the big city, because very soon I realized that I am feeling very lonely, and that I was in great need for love. Of course, all of us, we are always in great need of love, but we are searching for this love very often in completely wrong places and in a completely wrong ways how to get it. So as the time was passing by, we were getting used to living in New York, to the conditions of no way of life. So we were forced to look for a job now. It was after a couple of months. And in the very beginning, we were forced to work in a construction business. I didn't want to be a waiter. It was I didn't feel really very comfortable with this. But since I was very skillful in many crafts, very soon I met a guy from Belgrade who was a contractor, and he had a lot of businesses around New York, and it was basically construction work. So this is how it started in New York. This work for rich people, fixing their apartments, changing their walls, lifting up their old floors, painting, working on the roofs, etc. But anyway, I was happy. I was strong, young, healthy, and it used to bring some money, some income, so we can pay our rent, and of course to spend all the rest, nightclubs and drugs, and just spending money in bars, going to music concerts and things like this. But when I would finish my work, I used to walk through the city for many kilometers, for many miles down the avenues and boulevards. And I was thinking about life. What should I do next? What is my real goal? What I'm looking for? And it was always search for love. From the very childhood of mine, I was searching for love. I was searching for immortality. I was always longing for continuation of everything. But whatever I would do, it had its ending up. It ended. Everything was finishing. Everything was finite. And I was looking always for infinite things. And the highest way of continuation is basically immortality. And I was always thinking of death, that everything will finish. We are all going to die. And this longing for love was always mingled and mixed with longing for immortality, for eternal continuation of everything. And at the same time, during those long walks through Manhattan, among millions of people, in this really very extremely huge city, I used to feel great loneliness and emptiness in my chest, emptiness in my heart, emptiness in my soul. And I remember sometimes I would even weep walking down the street, looking shop windows and all this wealth of Manhattan and all those people running around in great speed. And very soon I came to realize that there is no real love and there is no real friendship among all those people. And everything was based on use. If you can be used for something, it would be good for somebody. But real love, real friendship, I couldn't find. And at the end of everything, there was always a joint of marijuana. Getting stoned and forgetting this sadness and loneliness, which became a great part of my life. So after about 6 months, we were forced to leave our apartment in Upper East Side, since those people who were owners of it, they came back from Yugoslavia. And Julia had found an apartment in Spanish Harlem, which was 116th Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. That area was much cheaper for living, although it was much more dangerous. And of course, Harlem was not that safe place. But anyway, we didn't care for it. And myself, in the first place, I thought nothing can happen to me, because I knew that if I'm good to people, they will be good to me. So we moved in this big apartment, and the life continued on. But the things with my friend, with my beloved friend and brother Gera, haven't been good. Things didn't go well, because he was taking more and more heroin, and he was getting hooked, he was getting addicted on it, and this damn powder from hell was changing his character very much, and it was ruining his health, and his personality started to be much different than before. He became very different, and we were not that close anymore. He was ready to cheat and to lie. So you could just... I was losing confidence in him. And besides that, Julia was getting really scared of those people from Spanish Harlem. And she became really very nervous about the whole neighborhood. So they decided finally to move to the Lower East Side. And that's how we separated finally. At that time, Gary and me, we became really pretty much distant from each other, because his personality changed a lot from heroin, and this friendship was really cooling down, although we loved each other very much. And I was sad about it, but I couldn't do anything. So the heroin was between us, like a impenetrable wall. So we greeted each other, and they left. They moved out, and I stayed alone. And I was alone for about almost 1 month. In the meantime, I found another job. It was much better. It was not construction anymore. I met a girl. She was in fashion business, and she introduced me to a small textile design company in Fashion District in Manhattan, and they employed me. So it was now much, much better from construction work. Now I was doing my work as an artist. It was fashion design, and we were making patterns for textile. And it was very, very creative and clean work. We were working in studio, and I was only a man there. Two girls were owners. One was black, she was called Coco, and another was American, white American, Italian background girl, pretty young one,
both of them were young, but they were very professional orientated, and they were running this little firm, and there were five more employees. All of them were girls. So it was kind of funny for me to be with seven girls every day. And during the course of time, the black boss, very, very beautiful and very attractive girl, Coco, she started to show her attraction towards me. And finally she proposed that we could go out one night, go for a dinner or things like this. So of course I realized, what is it all about? And of course I was not an innocent angel, but still I realized it's not good to have this kind of relation with your boss. So I refused her once, second time, third time, and then she became really very upset about it. She became very, finally very mad about it. So she started to hate me. I realized that. And one day when I came for work in the morning, I saw all my things and my painting tools, all my painting set, I found put in one big bag, plastic garbage bag, in front of the studio. And of course I realized, what is it all about? So I didn't even go inside to ask what happened, because I was expecting something like this. And this was one of my first lessons with women in New York. They were really very spoiled in a way, and very decadent. And it was surprising to me to realize that women are approaching men
instead of being opposite.
And if you do not answer to her quest for having, let's say openly, for sex, she starts to hate you, and she can be very dangerous. She can make a different harm to you. So this was one of my first lessons about women, about dangerous, spoiled women from New York. And this was another hit to my heart, realizing there is no real love. And this loneliness and this sadness was only growing up in myself. And in this period, I realized there was a certain pain in my chest that was growing more and more. And I was calling it psychic pain, because it was not pain, it was not bodily pain, it was more pain in the soul. And I just couldn't find the way how to get rid of this pain. Sometimes this pain would become really unbearable, and then I would go out walking for miles, just trying to exhaust myself, but I couldn't get rid of it. Sometimes when I would meet my friend Gera in the bar
next to his house,
the Lower East Side, I think it was East 10th Street, between Avenue A and 1st Avenue, if I remember well. There was a little bar with billiards. So we were playing pool, drinking beer, smoking grass, and talking about our life in New York. It was our first year there, and I realized that he also had that kind of pain, although he didn't name it this way, he didn't explain it this way, but I realized that he was also suffering from certain lack of higher meaning of our life in New York. But he was actively quenching this pain with heroin, which was really terrible to me, because although I was not clean as well, I was smoking marijuana, and from time to time, periodically, I used to buy cocaine and use cocaine, although very seldom. I was very sad about Gera, because I realized how he was going really into the really great danger. He was like a younger brother to me. I loved him really greatly, and I was in great worry of what is going to happen to him. And I tried to tell him not to do it, but he was always telling me, "Oh, don't worry, I'm not addicted. I have a control over it." At that time, he was very successful in a professional level because we had a friend. His name was Peter Caesar. He was very successful in video business. He had a great, very successful, big video company. During the Winter Olympic Games in Sarajevo, years before that, we met him there because he was lending his video equipment to that manifestation. And we met him at that time in Belgrade because he was acquainted with one friend of ours. And now we met and we were together in New York, and he employed Gera, since Gera was a very good artist. And he was working in graphic design in Peter Caesar's studio. But since Gera's personality and his character changed a lot in a wrong direction, he got in conflict with our friend Peter Caesar, so he got fired. He left the studio, which was really a great misfortune for Gera, because he really had a good income over there. And now he was without job, sitting at home, smoking and getting stoned on heroin. So very often he would ask me if I could find a job for him, because in the meantime I found another art job. I was employed in one studio. It was painting job, art painting job, in rich homes of New York inhabitants. And we were doing ornaments, faux finishes, marbleizing, things like this, decorative work. And I was insisting with my bosses, there were two bosses, Michael and Bob, to hire my friend Gera, who was a very good artist, but they were refusing since there was not enough work for another employee. But finally, because I was really stubborn in it, I was almost boring to them, so they accepted him. And I was very happy to be together with him, working with him. But very often he would come for work, and when I started to tell him that it's time to quit with heroin, he would say, "Heroin is mother." But the next morning he would say, "The heroin is illusion. Heroin is cheating me." And then again he would say, "Heroin is something best in the world." And finally, this really sad event appeared. One morning when we came into the studio, our boss told us that for a short period of time they're out of work and they had to give us our salary and to tell us to go home for a while. But very soon they will call us back for work because there was a big business preparing, big work was preparing in Waldorf Astoria Hotel. There was a big project with many rooms over there. They had to be marbleized. They had to be painted in artificial marble and many other decorative work with gold ornaments. So they said, "We will call us as soon as this work starts up." So we said, "Okay, no problem." And we went home. So this period of being out of work was something like 20 days. And from time to time I would call them and they said, "Don't worry, we will call you." I didn't see my friend Gera for a while at that time because he was acquainted with certain very suspicious people and very bad people, drug dealers and really some other junkies. So I couldn't really be with him during that period. And about 1 month being out of work, I called my
boss,
Bob, again and asked him if there is a real chance for me and Gera to go back to work. Otherwise, we are going to be forced to look for another job because we were out of money. And to my great surprise, Bob told me, but don't you know, and didn't Gera tell you that we called him and he's working here again, and he's here for at least 10 days now, don't you know that? But unfortunately for you, there is still no place for you, and we will call you. So when I heard that, I couldn't believe. It was like something is shooting at me. And when I put down the handle of the phone, I was really feeling terrible. I couldn't believe that he could do something like this to me, my beloved friend Gera. They called him. He went there. He started to work again, so he couldn't even call me. Just tell me that he is back there on the place, working place that I found and where I basically employed him. So it was really maybe one of the worst days in my life. How heroin changed him a lot. How he became so cold and unfriendly, almost like my enemy. And in the middle of big city of New York, he left me on the street without employment and without income, and he didn't even inform me about that. I felt really terrible. It was like he stabbed a knife in my heart. And this was my school, this was my another lesson, a life lesson in New York City, how this city was changing people, making them cold and without love, just fighting for their own existence and stepping on live people just to reach their own goal. So I didn't see Gera for a long time after that. I have heard that not long time from that event, of course, he couldn't stay at that company any longer because he was very easily getting in conflict with people. So they fired him. And I have heard that he finally made decision to move together with his girlfriend to Canada, to Toronto, because Julia was a girl from rich family, rich Belgrade family. So they had an apartment in Toronto, and they decided to go there because Gera realized that he is really losing his mind and his health in New York City. And he thought if he moved to Canada, to Toronto, that he will save himself. Although he didn't realize that his demons were traveling together with him. So I was sad about the whole thing. I really never could stop loving him. And I was not really angry with him. And I forgave him very soon, but I just didn't have enough strength to meet him again. So he finally left. I found myself in a big city, basically alone. Although there were other friends from Belgrade that left together with us. But Gera was closest to me. I loved him a lot. He was my brother. And I was very sad about the whole thing. So the Святи крепки, святи бессмертни, помилуй нас, святи Боже, святи. Святи безсмертні, помилуй нас, святи Боже, святи крепкі, святи. Святому Духу і нині, і
prisno i vo vjeki vjekov, amin. Svijati i besmertni, pomiluj nas, jesi lak, svijati.
Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life.
But then in the meantime, I met another friend from Belgrade. We knew each other very superficially in Belgrade. So when he came to New York, we met. And since I was alone in my apartment and I couldn't pay this rent alone, I invited him to be my roommate. He accepted it, of course. And now I had another partner, another friend. This guy, his name was Gigi. He was coming also from, let's say, rich family from Belgrade. And he was planning to start his own private business in New York, although he didn't know exactly what is it going to be. And in about 1 month, working many other things, he decided to ask for some money from his parents. As a matter of fact, not from his parents, but from his uncle, to borrow some money from him. And his uncle lended him $10,000 in order that Gigi could start a business with this amount of money. In the meantime, Gigi became acquainted with a friend of ours. She was in fashion business as well, but unfortunately she was also hooked on heroin, although we didn't know that, and it was not that hard like in Gera's case. And she was very interesting person. Her name was Kirila, very strange name. And they have decided to open a store in Lower East Side. In the beginning, Gigi proposed this to me, but I refused it because I didn't know exactly, I didn't know him well, so I didn't know how is it all going to be, and I was not ready to enter this risk with him. So I just said, well, no, I'm not really interested in that. So he opened this business with this friend of ours, Kirila, and in the beginning it was good. So I was glad, you know. After all, he had enough money to pay half of the rent. But very soon the problems started with their friendship and with their companionship, and he realized that she is a heroin addict, and more she was absent from work. She was not making basically she was a tailor, and she was supposed to make dresses and shirts and garments, things like this. She was very good in it. And the Gigi's part of business, he was mostly in trade. He had a friend on Bali, and he was importing batik textile from Bali. And Kirilla was tailoring it. She was making from this material beautiful shirts and skirts and things like this. She was really good in it. But slowly she was deteriorating in everything since she was drug addict. And Gigi was getting upset more and more with it, with her. And one day they got in fight, and he said, "I'm going to fire you." But that couldn't go so easy, because she was a full partner. She was not employee. So she said, "You cannot fire me. This is my business as much as it is yours." But Gigi made a really bad contract with her, bad deal. It was very stupid from him, because the bank account now belonged to both of them, and both of them could take money from it only with one signature. So what she did as a drug addict, as a junkie, the same day when they had fight, and when she realized that she is not going to work with him anymore in that store, immediately she ran to bank with a friend of her, and she took all the rest of the money. It was something like $4,000 that left from the start of the whole business. So Gigi had a feeling that something is going wrong, and he finally realized that she did it. So he ran to the bank and realized that he's robbed. He was out of his mind. He came back home. I was at home. He was completely out of his nerves and out of his mind. He was completely mad, and he was telling, "I'm going to kill her. I'm going to kill her. I'm going to find her." Of course, he couldn't find her, so he was completely devastated. He was completely ruined. And I realized that I cannot leave him this way. In the meantime, I really became more close, and I realized he's not that bad guy. He was, you know, more or less good guy. So I proposed him. I said, "Okay, don't worry. If you want, I'm going to be your partner." And of course, he accepted it really gladly. And he was released from his great, he worried a lot what is going to be and how is he going to give back this, how he's going to repay to his uncle this debt of $10,000. So finally we became partners, and in the meantime we have realized that it's not going to go that easy with only with the store. So we have decided to start another business together with our art store in Lower East Side, and we have bought a van and started to make small movings. And with these movings we were able to make cash and at the same time to work in our store. He continued to import clothings, and I invented another way of artwork. We were going around Lower East Side and looking for second-hand furniture shops. There we would look for nice pieces of furniture, second-hand. We would buy them, and then I would work on them, fixing them, renovate them, putting them together, making really weird pieces of furniture. They resembled even sculptures. I would sand them, paint them, making art pieces of them, and then expose them in our window, and they looked really very, very attractive. So this way we had a lot of customers from more rich part of the city. Some of them were really rich people, and some of them were from gay world, looking for extraordinary, eccentric pieces of furniture. And so we were making a pretty good income, and we had a, you know, in a way, easy life. On one hand, we were doing moving business, and on another, we were shop owners. So this was going for a while, and it was a pretty good part of my life in New York. Although deep in myself, I was still faced with this deep, deep loneliness and this grief in my heart that I couldn't realize what is it really about. But I said, this is how it has to be, and I have this belief that it will be better. In the meantime, we had really, we made really big number of friends, acquaintances, and our store became kind of a center, a kind of club. Many of our acquaintances and friends would stop by during the course of the day and sit there. We would prepare a cup of tea or coffee, and of course, always there would be a joint of marijuana. Gigi was a great fan of hash smoking, so he found a hashish dealer in that hotel where Sid Vicious killed his girlfriend. The name of that hotel was
Chelsea Hotel.
So we even had hashish to smoke, which was really a rare thing to find in New York. And the life was going on. Very often we would go to the parties, and cocaine was more and more present. And I didn't like that, but I didn't have this joy anymore. So I was looking for it in cocaine. And then, in one party, we met a very nice-looking girl, and I was the first one who approached her. But then I have realized somehow that she is not interesting in me. And then Gigi approached her, and they started to talk. And they spent an hour in conversation, and I have realized that they like each other. And at the end of party, she left together with two of us, and Gigi took her at our apartment. So she spent the night with him, and the very next day, the very next morning, I have realized that she became his girlfriend. And very soon, and very strange to me, she told him, "Gigi, be my husband." Which is really crazy. After one night of sex, she proposed him marriage. And he accepted it. So very soon, she moved in our apartment, and very soon they got married. So since this this apartment was in really a bad area, and she was a very, she was a girl from a very decent family from California, and she used to work in fashion business. She was one of those magazines, fashion magazines. She was a journalist. She couldn't live there, and she found an apartment also in Uptown, but now it was West Side. It was at Riverside Drive, somewhere around 97th Street, if I remember well. It was also a Spanish area, but much more decent from that east side. And now we started to live in this apartment, nice big apartment. But very soon I have realized that this girl didn't like me at all. And somehow she started to confront Gigi with me. And I have realized that he changed a lot in attitude towards me. So I didn't know what to do because, I was in a bad situation, living with them, not having my own apartment anymore. And one day we got in fight, Gigi and me, and that's how it happened. Gigi told me that we have to repay our debt to his uncle back in Belgrade. And so he made a salary. So he proposed me that we are not going to use whole amount of money that we are making in 1 month. He was giving salary to me and to himself equal, and all the rest he was putting aside and saving it to repay the amount of money that he received from his uncle. So I accepted it. I said, okay. Well, I was not obliged to do this because I was an equal partner. So this debt was his part. That was his obligation, not mine. But anyway, because I was always, in a way, trying to be good and trying to be friendly, I accepted it, although I didn't have to. And one day, Gigi was telling me, of course, that he doesn't have anything in his bank account, that his private bank account is empty, and that all of his money was on other bank account belonging to his uncle. But one day he said, I'm going to bank, wait for me in the van. And I have realized, absolutely unintentionally, accidentally, I went out from van. It was boring to me to sit in. So I came close to the window glass of bank, and I have realized that he's not putting money, that he's taking money from the bank account, and I knew that he didn't have money. And I have realized that he was cheating me all the time. He was cheating me, and he had money, and he was not giving this money to me. He was lying to me that he is putting this money together in order to repay his debt to his uncle. So it was another great blow from a friend, from the friend. First one was from Gera, and another one was from Gigi. And I have realized that he was cheating me and lying to me for a long course of time, basically since he got married to Pamela. Pamela was her name. And then when he came back, I have asked him, what is it all about, Gigi? Why do you lie to me? He started to, he tried to protect him, to himself, and started to lie even more. So we really started to fight. Our conflict became really, we were quarreling all the time on our way back home. And finally I have decided that we have to split. There was no way of common life anymore.
Thank you.
Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life.
In the meantime, I met another guy from Belgrade. He was an artist, and he used to live in just across East River in Brooklyn. That area was called Greenpoint, and it was a kind of art colony. There was a lot of young artists were not, of course, able to pay very expensive, very high rents in Manhattan for their art studios, so they all moved over there. And he told me that the apartments are much cheaper in that part of New York, in Brooklyn. So I remembered him, and I got in contact with him, and I told him, his name was Vlasta. I said, Vlasta, could you please take a look around and see if there is an apartment in Greenpoint or in that area that I could rent for me, because I cannot live with Gigi and his wife Pamela anymore, because there is a great split between us. We cannot live together anymore because, he was just cheating me and he was really bad to me. And he said, okay, no problem. Don't worry. I think I have an apartment for you. And after not very long time, he called me and he said, I found a great big apartment for $600, which was not that great amount of money for you. And please come and take a look. And So, of course, I was very happy to hear that, and I went there and I met the owner, landlord of that apartment. The apartment was in a building in Williamsburg. Williamsburg was part of that part of Brooklyn, right across the Williamsburg Bridge. And it was, again, a Puerto Rican area, although not that dangerous. It was pretty safe, and it was in between Polish and Orthodox Jews, Hasidic Jews area. So it was pretty good, pretty decent for living. And it was also, in a way, an art colony. Because in that building was inhabited by artists, mostly from Europe, working there and living there. And by that period, it was end of my life, my common life with Gigi, and with my life in Manhattan. And it was the beginning of another period, which was very fruitful to me in a spiritual meaning. But now I have to go back again in the period of common life with Gigi. In our friendship and in our companionship, we were smoking marijuana and hashish a lot. And together we have realized that it is not really good for us, and it makes us really weak in terms of professional way of living, in terms of our profession, in terms of making money and making living. It was really making us weak and not really able to be cautious in full action. So very often we would say, okay, let's now stop smoking for a week. Let's now stop smoking for 10 days. And making these periods of being clean and being able to work more active. So I was realizing in those periods we were really able to accomplish these clean periods. And I have realized that I'm feeling really good during those periods of not smoking. And I have realized that being clean is something really important. And really something which is something really truly meat to a human being, to be clean from narcotics, to be really on your own powers, on natural powers. And in this period of my life, I was inclining towards to be clean and to be more connected to nature, to some higher power. I didn't know at that time what it was. I couldn't even name it as God, but I knew that there is a higher power, power from high, that is ruling the whole universe, that is ruling the whole nature, and that there must be certain rules in the nature which are
intelligent, that there must be an intelligence of nature. But still, I didn't know what kind of intelligence is this. Somehow, I was realizing that there is a personality, a higher personality in nature that is ruling everything. I didn't know how to get in touch with it. I didn't know how to make contact with this intelligence in order to get answers for my questions, for my life questions. And I was meditating extremely intensely during those days and sinking deep into despair. And it was an absurd. I thought if I meditate more, I would feel better, and I would sink deeper into despair. And I thought from this despair, through the meditation, I will change the whole thing, I will change my life, and I will rescue myself. It was a real great trap that I couldn't realize and I couldn't see through. So since my relation became really bad with Gigi and his wife, and before I have decided to move out from that apartment and to split with him for good, one day at one party I have met a young man from Belgrade called Darko. He was a very interesting person to me. Interesting in this manner that he was extremely normal person. I have to say normal person because I haven't met for a long time such a normal person, such a calm person, such person full of joy and certain serenity and peace. And I couldn't realize where is he getting this from, this
calmness,
this peacefulness, this joy. And I have realized that he's not drinking alcohol, he is not taking drugs, he doesn't do anything which is so common to me and to the circle of people that I was acquainted with. And I have realized that he is possessing something that I needed badly, and I didn't know what it is. And I was really trying to get closer to him. So we finally acquainted, we met, and we became friends, I have to say. He was a very warm person, very open person. Although he was not that weird, and he was not freak, he was not weird, and he was not interesting in this manner as my other acquaintances and friends were interesting to me. Because all those people that I was with, they were mostly artists and really weird people, freaks, as they say in New York. Very attractive, but absolutely crazy, all of them. And it was really making me sick. But this guy was absolutely, in a way he was, as we were saying, straight. But he was so normal and he was so warm. And he was so attractive to me to be with him, to talk to him. Somehow I would feel relaxed with him. I didn't really know what it is with this man. But of course, I didn't have that freedom to ask him this in the very beginning of our friendship. What are you doing with yourself to be like this? And this person happened to be an extremely important person in my life. Maybe one of the most important persons in my life. And I will tell you how it happened to be. So when we became more close, I used to go at his place and spend evenings with him. He would invite me and I would gladly accept his invitation. So I would go there and after work, in the afternoons, I would be there and have tea with him and spend pleasant afternoons with him in a very pleasant conversation. So we somehow we have found common topics. Basically the life in Western world, and I have realized that he left Belgrade in a similar way as I have. He graduated in Belgrade University at architecture faculty. And he was an architect. He was an engineer of architecture. So he went to Australia, and he spent a few years in Sydney in a very similar way like I was living in New York. And also he got in problem with not that much in, with drugs, but with alcohol. And he got really hooked on alcohol, and he was really having a bad time with alcohol, and he realized that he's ruining his life. And one day he met some Romanian people in Sydney, and it happened to be that they were Orthodox Christians, because Romania is an Orthodox Christian country. And since they were some good people, they told him, Darko, you are really devastating yourself, and you are ruining yourself, and there is a way to solve your problem, your despair, your depression. There is a way different than from your alcoholic way of solving your problems. There is another way. And when he asked him, what is this another way, they told him, it's a religion. It's Orthodox Christian religion. You know, there is a living God, and if you address him, if you ask him for help, he can help you. Since he was an atheist, he was coming from a communist family, and he was not baptized, he refused them. He said, well, I don't really believe in God, you know, I think it's only a great illusion. I don't think I can really help myself this way. But they were insisting, and one day he went together with them in Romanian Orthodox Church in Sydney, and he realized during the liturgy, during the church service, that he is feeling something that he didn't feel for a long time, or even never in his life. So to make this long story short, my friend Darko, he became Orthodox Christian. He got baptized in Sydney, but in the meantime, since he had some problems with the law in Sydney, he was forced to leave Australia, and he came came to New York, and that's how we met. And after a while, when we became closer, and at one of our afternoon talks, I had decided to ask him about his private life. And I said, Darko, don't get me wrong, but I'm realizing that you really are different from most of my friends. And you have some kind of to me, strange, not really strange, but something which is really not known to me, some kind of joy that and serenity and peace that I myself do not have, and I would like to have it. Where do you get it? What do you do in your life? I mean, what is the philosophy of your life? So when Darko heard my question, he replied with a certain smile on his face. And he said, well, I've been waiting for this, and I was expecting that you're going to ask me this. But I'm a little bit afraid that you're going to be disappointed when I tell you what is the philosophy of my life, if you call it this way. Well, you know, I am an Orthodox Christian, and right now we are in a period of Great Lent, which is a period of fasting before the greatest feast day of Christianity, which is called Easter, and I'm preparing for communion. So when he told me this, I must admit, I felt really disappointed. Not even disappointed, but somehow I felt everything but not Christianity, everything but not Orthodoxy, because I was coming from Orthodox country. And although I have to admit, I have never felt hatred towards, I have never felt hatred towards Orthodox priests or something like that, but I was always looking at them with some kind of sorrow, you know, because I have realized that these people, these poor priests, are dedicating their lives to something that doesn't exist, because God doesn't exist, and they're dedicating their lives in vain. And the whole thing with the Orthodox Christianity was so boring to me, because I thought, oh, it's so stupid, it's nothing, because
the Far East religions, the Buddhism, Hinduism, yoga, meditation, those things were always the most supreme things in my life, and I thought this is the most serious way of living. So now this whole thing about Christianity was so, it was like a cold shower to me, I have to admit. And being snob as I was, I just finished my cup of tea and I told him, well, Darko, okay, I understand, and now I have to go, you know, now it's too late. And I was just disappointed. I couldn't continue to talk about this with him because I was expecting basically that he has found some special Far East meditation or some Far East special mysterious cult or something like this. But above all of that, nothing but only Orthodox Christianity. And I told him that now I have to go, and I saw that he realized that I was disappointed. But he was a very nice guy. He didn't want to show me that he realized this, and he said, well, Atsa, this was my nickname for Alexander, he said, Atsa, of course, just we'll see each other again, see you later. And so that's how I left his home. In what manner I finished this conversation this evening with my friend, and I went back home. Since during that period I was in really bad relation with Gigi and his wife, when I arrived home, I went straight in my room, closed the door behind myself, and I have sat in my chair and started to put the whole film back about the afternoon spent with my friend Darko. And I was really thinking deep about the whole thing that he told me about Orthodox Christianity. And at one hand, I was disappointed with his reply. But on the other, I was still under the deep impression of his beautiful personality. And I was under the deep impression of his peace that he had in himself, that he emanated from himself. And finally, I have realized that I cannot just refuse it just like that. And there must be something deeper in his story about Orthodoxy, and that I cannot refuse it just like that. So I have decided I'm going to go to his apartment again, and I have to talk with him again about the whole thing, because I had a great respect toward this young man, and there was no way to be so decadent and so spoiled and to refuse what he told me just like that. So the very next day I have called him from my store by the end of the working hours. And I said that I would like really to meet him again and to talk about his life philosophy again. And he was apparently very happy to hear that, because he told me later that I'm not going to appear maybe again, since I was disappointed with his Christian stuff. So I went after my working hours, and I knocked on his door, and his beautiful smiley face appeared, and he let me in. And from that moment on, a great beautiful change happened in my life. And about that, I will talk to you next time. Goodbye, and have joy and have happiness in your life.
Thank you for listening Radio Svetigora. the radio station of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of Montenegro and the Seaside. Blessed by His High Eminence, Metropolitan Amfilohije.